Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Trolley, bringing the best of my Times radio show, Monday to Thursday, 10 till 1. Coming up, American carnage. We speak to Henry Zeffman in Washington about all of that. Plus, Danny Finkelstein gives us his take of putting it all into the historical perspective. In a moment, we'll have our columnist panel for Thursday. It's Webb Crams, it's Esther Webb and Robert Crams. But I need your help. We are discussing big ideas. A competition has been launched to find big policy ideas that could improve the country. And we want yours. We've done this before when you've sent in voice notes. So basically, record yourself on your phone, a voice note, your big idea, whatever it might be, how to improve schools or hospitals or the tax system or the environment, the screamingly obvious idea that you can't understand why nobody else has suggested it. Record it on your phone, then email me, matt.chorley@times.radio. That's matt.chorley@times.radio. And we'll use it on my Times Radio show on Monday. And you'll then be able to hear it on the podcast. It'll all join up. It'll be perfect. Studio@times.radio for your policy suggestions to make the world a better place. Big or small, we don't mind. Right then, it's time for our columnists. It must be Webb Cram, Esther Webber and Robert Crampton. It's hard to avoid the conclusion that Barack Obama and so many others have reached, Robert, that there's a direct connection between what the actual President of the United States did and then what happened in the US Capitol.
Well, yeah, obviously, I mean, it's hard to avoid it because it's true. I might take issue with you saying how depressing it is, though. I think this might be the end of Trumpism, at least as a serious force in Republican politics. I mean, obviously, it's going to be there because there's all these angry middle-aged white men, as we saw from the crowd who stormed the Capitol. But as a force in serious Republican politics, maybe this is it. I mean, maybe sensible Republicans will now get their act together and push this to the margins of American political life because they think that maybe they can now see where it leads. So maybe not such a bad day. I mean, obviously an awful day because of the deaths and everything, but maybe it's the end of this kind of politics, at least in the Republican Party.
Yeah, Esther, in the immediate wake of the election in November, there were lots of hot takes of people saying, you know, Trump might be gone, but Trumpism isn't dead. This is a very close election result. And actually, as even Mitch McConnell finally admitted yesterday, this was not a close election result. It was an overwhelming victory by Joe Biden, a margin of error that we've seen time and again in results which have been hailed as significant victories. So do you think this puts an end to Trumpism? I mean, in the end, I suppose it comes down to what the Republican Party does.
Yeah, I mean, you're right that some reports were exaggerated about kind of the closeness of the result, and that was a sort of function of the way the night unfolded. For geeks who stayed up all night, it was the states that stayed with Trump that came through first, and it only became clear the scale of the Biden victory over a course of days. But I think I would probably differ from Robert a bit. I think even if this is a spent force within the official Republican Party, I think what was really striking and alarming was the extent to which the people who carried out this raid on the Capitol were kind of parroting misinformation and conspiracy theories, which have in part been encouraged by the president. And even if they're not going through kind of official political channels, those are the kind of things that are quite difficult to put back in the box once you've switched people onto them. So I think even if, yes, it's the end of this type of politics having a seat in the White House, but it's still going to be a sort of undercurrent that America needs to think about and to deal with.
Yeah, I think you could well be right. And the problem is that if there is a force on an extreme in politics, someone will try to appeal to that force. That's the, Nigel Farage never, amusingly, won his seat in the House of Commons, but that didn't stop him having a big influence on politics because mainstream parties try to sort of woo that constituency. Let's move away from America at the moment. Let's talk about, in fact, Esther, let's talk about one of your favourite subjects, the House of Lords. There's been another row this week. There's been a bit of a ding-dong. Amongst everything else that's going on in the world, there's been another ding-dong in the House of Lords about the fact that more people are going to be joining them on the red benches, and the people who, in particular, that Boris Johnson is introducing there, not just the number, but the quality. Quality as well as quantity of the people. And a bit of a shift in policy on the House of Lords.
Yeah, so obviously over Christmas and New Year it was announced that Boris Johnson was creating new peers, and in particular there's been a big focus on one of them, Peter Cruddas, who the House of Lords Appointments Commission recommended should not be eligible for a peerage because of some previous dodgy dealings. And Boris Johnson has overruled them and said, let's have him in anyway. And this was raised in the House of Lords this week, with people basically saying you can't just ride roughshod over the system. And the minister said, well, yes, we can, actually. And the Prime Minister hasn't made any commitments to keep down the numbers. And then there's a sort of wider question, which maybe we'll get into, about whether this is part of some longer term strategy to ultimately dismantle the House of Lords.
Robert, you and I are about the only two Times columnists who don't have a seat in the Lords already. Would you would you take one if offered?
Yeah, I couldn't resist it. I mean, I'm against it, but I'm too much of a. I probably would, just because it's such a. I mean, what is it? The best club in London or something? Somebody said. I mean, this is the only justification for the Lords in a democracy is the idea of a kind of revising chamber of experts and specialists. But so when you appoint the, I think these 16 new peers that are appointed over Christmas, 56, but nine of them, 56% have a background in politics. I mean, they're politicos, essentially. They're not, learned scientists or academics or, engineers or people who know lots of stuff about important things. So it's a dangerous game, isn't it? Because you're essentially watering down the quality, and those of us who have got a real democratic problem with the House of Lords are makes her argument for us, really.
What about you, Esther? I don't think I've ever actually asked you before if you'd actually take a seat at the Lords if offered.
It would be very tempting, wouldn't it? Who wouldn't like to sit on those red benches all day? But I think everything I've said and written, I probably couldn't.
Me too.
But to anyone listening, I'm open to persuasion.
I mean, maybe it might be one of those things where, you know, bring you on the inside and stop you causing trouble by constantly writing about the House of Lords. You know, that's the age old trick. You know,
well,
like the hiring...
I'll just say I'm open to offers.
you probably get one. I mean, was it Lloyd George who sold peerages? I mean, that's effectively what's happening. We're back. You know, nothing ever changes, does it? That's 100 years ago, and that's effectively what they're doing now.
Patronage is not a new, is not a new thing. Okay, one person who may not be rewarded with a seat in the House. Well, I don't know. Maybe he will. Gavin Williamson. What havoc could he wreak in the House of Lords? Another top week this week for the Gavlar, Esther.
Yes, it has been. Obviously, his political capital had already taken a battering over the whole exams fiasco last summer. Then there was the ordeal of university students being exposed to COVID and locked in their student digs. And now there's this hastily performed U-turn on schools. Which, according to numerous sources, was his shout. So he was the one pushing, really pushing, for schools to reopen. And apparently he won over the Prime Minister on that score. And people are really saying the buck has to stop with him. And there have been too many of these late decisions. I don't think not everyone in politics, anyway, agrees with that. They think, you know, these are difficult decisions. But it is looking pretty sticky for him. And he's probably glad that there is no reshuffle imminent.
Before I ask you what you think about all this, Robert, let's take a listen. This is terrific. I mean, he really is the gift that keeps on giving. This is Gavin Williamson in the House of Commons yesterday, really clearing things up for us.
And I can absolutely assure the Honourable Lady, I will not let schools be open for a moment longer than they... I will not let schools be closed for a moment longer than they need to be. I will do everything I can to ensure every school...
It's just so funny that it really tickles me. It's when he's like being so...
It's painful as well, isn't it? I'm embarrassed. I just got the hairs on the back of my neck just went up then. I had a bit of a flush. it's embarrassing hearing somebody suffer like that. I mean, the guy is just woefully overpromoted. I mean...
He was literally reading out loud. He was reading and banging. It was the way he was doing his statesman act, sort of banging the dispatch box very determinedly, but while saying, I will not let schools stay open for a moment longer than necessary.
Yeah, he needs to go back and do some online classroom learning, I think. It's just, I don't know. I mean, he's... And let's not forget his thing about Britain being the best country in the world, or better than all
the... Yes, the reason we got the vaccine first because we're the best country. Yeah, no, he is a top rate Wally. Robert, let's talk about your column and exercise. This is obviously, you know, exercise is about the only thing we could do these days.
Yeah, well, I did a feature last week about losing weight, and I've got a column coming up on Saturday about my exercise stats for last year, which are absolutely fascinating, obviously, to me at least. And how they altered in lockdown. Lots more, huge amounts of walking, hardly any cycling. I also record lots of other interesting stuff, but I won't get into that. that's my call.
Is this you recording it on your phone?
Goodness me, no. No, in a hardback notebook and on graph paper.
Oh, you literally write it down?
Yeah. Got it all, going back years, 20-odd years or so. Yeah. I did sort of doing it for future, the benefit of future sociologists, I like to think. Maybe some detectorist will unearth it in years to come.
Yeah, in a book of... Do you keep a diary in general or just a diary of your exercise?
No, I keep a diary in general, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to keep... I haven't been able to go to a shop to buy a diary to then not fill it in. But
I get my November, and it's one of the highlights of my year. I'm cracking open the new diary end of December.
I'd love, because when I come across old, partly filled in diaries, it's so good to have that sort of record. But I'm so bad at it. What about you, Esther? Do you ever fill in a diary?
I don't, but you do have a kind of record, Matt, because. I was looking back at red boxes from this time last year and looking at what you and me were writing about then. And it is quite a kind of weird historical relic, even in the space of the years, to look at things like why isn't Rebecca Long Bailey doing better in the Labour leadership contest? And when is Boris Johnson going to get back from Mustique and all this kind of thing? It's just a different world.
That stuff seems like about a decade ago. Let alone a year ago. It just seems like different. It's just a different era, isn't it?
Yeah, I noticed this week, because this week it popped up. It was 5 years since I joined the Times and started writing Redbox. And my very first Redbox email was cogitating on the possibility that Andy Burnham and Hilary Benn might do a job swap in Jeremy Corbyn's reshuffle.
Right. on the money of them, Matt.
Amazing.
That was Esther Webber and Robert Crampton there. And of course, if you want to get a subscription to The Times so you can read what they write, just go to thetimes.co.uk/timesredbox.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Redbox Podcast now, American Carnage. What the hell happened in America? To understand last night, you probably have to understand the last 4 years. Well, on a cold January day back in 2017, the new president of the United States of America was sworn in on the steps of the Capitol building.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
Congratulations, Mr. President. Yeah!
Every 4 years, we gather on these steps to carry out the orderly and peaceful transfer of power. Today's ceremony, however, has very special meaning, because today we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people. This American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
But it turns out the real carnage was yet to come. A mob of angry Trump supporters storming those very steps on which he had held an orderly and peaceful transfer of power. A riot in the heart of the Capitol building, which has left four dead, and a nation, if not the whole world, wondering just what has happened. In a country which once sought to export the democracy, it's now struggling to uphold at home. Well, joining me now live is our man in Washington, Henry Zeffman. Henry, the overnight curfew has been lifted literally in the last few minutes. How do things look the morning after the night before?
Well, I think people in Washington are waking up in a sense of shock here, Matt, to be honest. You know, this is not just the nation's capital, the home of the House of Representatives, the Senate, the White House and so on. It's also where many people live. It's their home. And there was an attempted armed insurrection in this city yesterday. To coin a phrase, that's not normal. And I think as people wake up and leave their houses for the first time legally in 12 hours here, you know, they will digest or begin only, as they only can, to digest the, you know, deeply, I suppose, to use an awful word, un-American thing that happened here yesterday.
Okay, let's just try and go back to the beginning. Sort of, let's pick through how the day unfolded to try and sort of put it into context. Because the trouble sometimes you're following things on Twitter and rolling news. You just wonder, how did all this happen? So let's go back to the beginning. What was supposed to have been happening yesterday?
What was supposed to happen was a mere formality, which usually just lasts about half an hour, which is that in a joint session of Congress, so the House of Representatives and the Senate gathered together, presided over by Mike Pence as vice president, they just read out the results of each state in slightly flowery, formal language. And at the end, Mike Pence bangs a gavel and says that Joe Biden's going to be president. This has never in modern times been controversial, even when it's difficult for the person banging the gavel. You know, Al Gore had to preside over the session announcing George W. Bush had defeated him, for example. We knew it was going to be a little bit messier than that. You know, Donald Trump had been insisting that Mike Pence had powers, which he does not have, to subvert that process. But what actually happened was, I think, more serious than many people, and certainly the police officers of the Capitol, realised it was going to be, which is that this mob of pro-Trump supporters, who we knew were coming to Washington, swarmed the Capitol and forced those processes into suspension, which is when the real clashes between these protesters or rioters or whatever you want to call them and the police and legislators began to happen.
Before we get to that point, there was a big sort of political moment when Mitch McConnell, who is the Republican Senate Majority Leader, finally turned on Donald Trump. Let's take a listen to what he had to say before the riot began.
We cannot simply declare ourselves a national board of elections on steroids. The voters, the courts, and the states have all spoken. They've all spoken. If we overrule them, it would damage our republic forever. This election actually was not unusually close. Just in recent history, 1976, 2000, and 2004 were all closer than this one. The Electoral College margin is almost identical to what it was in 2016. If this election were overturned by mere allegations from the losing side, our democracy would enter a death spiral.
And we just explain to people who don't follow the exact ins and outs of American politics that closely how significant that speech from Mitch McConnell was.
Quite significant. I mean, Mitch McConnell is the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, and though he has never, you know, like basically the entire Republican Party pre-2016, you know, never been a natural fan of Donald Trump. He has been responsible for implementing his legislative agenda and shepherd it to the extent that it exists beyond tweets and shepherding it through Congress. I'm not sure that moment was so much Mitch McConnell turning on Donald Trump, who he has never much liked, but just sort of pragmatically dealt with, you know, whether that pragmatism to you is just politics or a deal with the devil. That's what it was. It was aimed more at the 10 or so at that point members of his caucus who were going to vote to overturn the election results. And you could tell that he was viscerally furious at the way those senators were planning to behave. But, you know, as good as the speech was, plenty of people will say, well, you can't be surprised, Mitch McConnell, that you end up with, you know, 10 ambitious Republicans willing, without probably believing in it, to go along with the idea that this election was rigged. You know, because that's just a slightly thicker end of the wedge of Mitch McConnell deciding to legitimate Donald Trump over the process of 4 years. You know, he rode the tiger too. You know, it was never a surprise once you're on that path that there were going to be ambitious Republicans who decided that their future lies in appeasing a mob of anti-democrats, anti-democrats with a small d.
I was going to say ironically, I'm not sure that's quite the right word, but it was James Lankford, a Republican senator from Oklahoma, who was just beginning to explain why he was one of those who supported overturning the election result when the mob whose challenge he was backing made it too dangerous for his speech to continue. Let's just take a quick listen to what happened when the protesters got into the Capitol.
Boss.
Protesters are in the building.
Thank you.
It wasn't anything you said.
And that's, I mean, and on it went. It was the sitting was suspended. Let's hear now from Borzal Daragahi, who's the international correspondent for The Independent. It was right outside when people struggled to contain the protesters.
Police are squabbling with protesters. Oh, there we go. And they just breached the Capitol again.
I mean, that was an extraordinary moment, that ahead of me. The fact that inevitably everything's caught on smartphones these days. But when the police, having held them back, in the end just seemed to sort of just let them in. They tore it at another part of the building. They tore down four layers of security fencing to get in. It was sort of extraordinary and yet surprisingly easy.
Oh, it was shockingly easy. I mean, there were lots of people saying yesterday, you know, people who've spent their careers around the Capitol, you know, I've seen people arrested in one case, I think, for you know, wearing the wrong dress code as they walk through the Capitol Rotunda. So the ease with which they breached the defences is going to be studied for some time. I mean, that is weird. I mean, some reports that there were fewer Capitol Hill police than usual because lots of them have been exposed to coronavirus, but nevertheless, you know, this did not come as a shock, right? This was advertised. I mean, Donald Trump went to address these protesters before, as they had said they were going to do, they marched down to the Capitol. It is weird. It seems, I think, to have been more a question of being undermanned than a question of the officers sort of letting them through, although there do seem to be some images and footage of a small handful of them basically letting them through. But whether that was just a response to being overwhelmed or not, I think will only become clear in the coming weeks and perhaps longer.
You've written an extraordinary piece for The Times. You can read it on, but it was up actually in very quick time after all this unfolded. But sort of talking through the colour, if you like, the extraordinary moments of people putting on gas masks. The House chaplain was praying, if that was right. Sort of paint us a picture of what was going on in the Capitol building.
I think it was frenetic and frantic. I mean, people were really, scared. There are lots of dramatic photos around this morning of members of the House of Representatives and members of the Senate, the two chambers, which both went into lockdown. Elected representatives lying on the floor, cowering in fear, particularly in the House of Representatives, where someone with a gun got to the building's doors. A load of congressmen used what furniture they could find to barricade the doors. They were then told to put gas masks on, which are stashed under all of their chairs. And there was an exchange of fire. The main doors to the House of Representatives, a sort of window pane upon those doors, has bullet holes in it today. In fact, a member of the House of Representatives said that he's going to lobby for those bullet holes to be kept in place in perpetuity as a reminder of what happened yesterday. It was very dramatic there. Then over in the Senate, apparently supporters of Trump were just marauding the corridors, shouting, "Where the F are they?" As they sought out legislators to do, who knows what with. And members of Congress, meanwhile, are barricaded into their offices. A few have started to sort of tweet pictures of the makeshift barriers they put in front of, or behind, I suppose, their doors as they heard rioters banging on them trying to get in. I mean, in one case, Democratic Senator Tammy Duckworth, both of her legs were amputated in Iraq when her helicopter was shot down. She was a helicopter pilot for the army in Iraq. And at one point during this, apparently Democratic senators realized, oh God, where's Tammy? She was in her office by herself and didn't necessarily have the means to get past the mob. So they had to, depute a delegation to go and basically lift her out of danger. I think there's going to be lots of pretty scarring tales about how much worse this could have been in the coming days.
Okay, let's sort of fast forward now. We obviously had Joe Biden made an extraordinary speech last night calling for calm and appealing to Donald Trump to do the same. He followed up in typical fashion, I suppose, telling his supporters to go home while also telling them they're completely right to think that the election had been stolen. Then the senators did reconvene last night, 8 o'clock US time. 2 hours of debate followed, and eventually the votes passed. Joe Biden confirmed as the next president of the United States. Vice President Mike Pence, who of course has spent the last 4 years by the side of Donald Trump, this is him making the announcement.
The votes for president of the United States are as follows. Joseph R. Biden Jr. of the state of Delaware has received 306 votes. Donald J. Trump of the state of Florida has received 232 votes. The whole number of electors appointed to vote for Vice President of the United States is 538. Within that whole number, a majority is 270. The votes for Vice President of the United States are as follows. Kamala D. Harris of the state of California has received 306 votes. Michael R. Pence of the state of Indiana has received 232 votes. The announcement of the state of the vote by the President of the Senate shall be deemed a sufficient declaration of the persons elected President and Vice President of the United States, each for the term beginning on the 20th day of January, 2021, and shall be entered together with the list of the votes on the journals of the Senate and the House of Representatives.
So that was a big moment to have finally got there in the end, Henry. And a concession from Donald Trump has come in the last couple of hours or so.
Yeah, that's right. A statement which Donald Trump had to issue basically through his allies, because he's banned from Twitter, Facebook and Instagram this morning, saying, even though I totally disagree with the outcome of the election and the facts bear me out, nevertheless, there will be an orderly transition on January the 20th. He goes on to acknowledge this will be the end of the greatest first term in presidential history. that statement is not just a concession. I think that statement is a last-ditch attempt to head off the use of something called the 25th Amendment. There is a clause in that amendment to the Constitution under which Mike Pence and just half of the cabinet can decide to remove Donald Trump from office. And there's quite serious talk last night after Donald Trump's reaction to these protests. And I think there's more to come out about that. There's some talk that he was quite gleeful when he saw the early scenes of what was unfolding. There was some serious talk last night that Mike Pence might invoke that power and become acting president. That's never happened before. That's never been used. It's never had to be used. And I think Donald Trump acknowledging reality there is an attempt to say to them, you don't need to do this. You can trust me not to do anything crazy in my remaining 13 days in office. And I suspect it will be enough. I suspect it will be enough. But we don't know how advanced those conversations became. And we don't know the true story of what Donald Trump did privately yesterday.
Well, in a moment, let's turn our attention to exactly what happens next if Donald Trump stays for a few more days. But how does Joe Biden unite the country while trying to sort of take the heat out of all this anger? We'll be joined by Daniel Finkelstein. That's next on Times Radio.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and via your smart speaker, Matt Chorley on Times Radio.
You're still joined by Henry Zeffman, who's live in Washington. But let's bring in Times columnist and keen student of American politics, Daniel Finkelstein. Hi, Danny.
Hello.
You've been pretty prolific already. So overnight, you wrote an analysis for The Times saying that Donald Trump likes to think he's unique, but he's not the first president to lose. It's not the first time that the political temperature has been at boiling point in America. Just put some of this into a historical context for us.
Well, what I was trying to do yesterday was to illustrate how central to the American system of government is two things. One is the concession of the presidency at the end of your period of office, which dates really back to Washington's decision after two terms, which he didn't have to do. It wasn't constitutionally mandated to do. You are now, after Roosevelt overstayed his welcome in 1951, it was decided that you could only serve two terms. But Washington could have gone on serving. He didn't want to be seen as a monarch, which had always been the accusation against him, and he wanted to return to Mount Vernon, which is his home. So the first thing is that was regarded by most people as one of his finest acts and the beginning of American democracy. And the second was 2 years earlier. He had personally led troops to go to Philadelphia to put down a rebellion against federal taxes. This was another part of the American Constitution, which was we won't let law be set by violence and misdemeanors. And this is what Donald Trump has effectively encouraged yesterday. So what I was trying to do is to show historically the background. Joe Biden now has another historical precedent. It's what I'm going to call today Ford's dilemma, which was Gerald Ford wanted to heal the nation, end the national dilemma. He didn't want a former president going to jail. He didn't want all the trials that took place. So he pardoned his predecessor. I think that Joe Biden will actually face a lot of problems with the courts pursuing some of these demonstrations from yesterday, members of the Trump family, Donald Trump himself, and he'll have to decide whether pursuing that is ending the national nightmare or not pursuing it, which was the decision Gerald Ford made, is ending the national nightmare. I both think and also believe that the right solution will prove... I think that he will judge this, and I believe it myself, that the right solution is, in fact, not Ford's solution on this occasion, and he should be pretty relentless against Trump.
What do you think, Henry? What is the approach that you think that Joe Biden will take?
Well, I think one small sign actually came yesterday, just before all the drama kicked off, which is that Joe Biden announced his choice to be his Attorney General to oversee his Department of Justice. And he chose a man called Merrick Garland, whose selection was swiftly overshadowed. But Barack Obama had actually previously nominated him to the Supreme Court in 2016, but Republicans refused to give him a hearing. Merrick Garland is a career prosecutor, before he became a judge, and, you know, a very serious professional, basically bureaucrat. So I think that what that tells us is that Joe Biden will basically put the decision about how to pursue Donald Trump out of politics. You know, he doesn't want a sort of Democratic Party hack in there pursuing Donald Trump for obviously political purposes. But I'm sure there is plenty that Donald Trump has done, which, you know, blandly professional career prosecutors can find and will find, which they will want to go after for the next few years.
And just looking at things from a British perspective, Danny, there was the sort of the Twitter scramble yesterday to say, why hasn't Boris Johnson or Dominic Raab responded? And then other people say, well, if you think that's the most important thing, then you're wrong. And then people say, well, if you don't think that's the most... does it matter what Britain says and does about what happened in America? And does it have any impact on the so-called special relationship?
Right. Well, absolutely. This government has to defend democratic norms. I was actually glad that Boris Johnson did make a statement yesterday, and I thought it was an appropriate one, as it happens. I did not think, when it was suggested that the British government ought to announce who had won the presidential election immediately after it happened, that was the job of the British government until it was called, and then the British government appropriately did acknowledge it. So I think, although people are keen to find fault, and by the way, I'm as keen as anybody else, because I have been very critical of Conservatives' willingness to accommodate what has long been obviously the authoritarian tendencies and populist tendencies of Donald Trump. So I'm by no means, accommodating or generous about the party's response in general. But I think in government, its response has been perfectly appropriate and was yesterday.
And Henry, you're waking up in Washington this morning. What do you plan to do now the curfew's been lifted?
Well, I don't usually go outside at 6:30 in the morning. There's not a lot to do, so I might leave it a couple of hours. But look, I don't know. I mean, who knows what today holds? I suspect that Donald Trump's statement has probably headed off some of the crazier outcomes which could have happened today. But you'd be a fool to rule anything out, really.
Well, we've come to the end of this episode of the Red Box Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from. Listen to my Times Radio show every Monday to Thursday, 10 till 1. You can listen on DAB Radio on your smart speaker. Get the Times Radio app. You can also listen to the Red Box Podcast of the Times Radio app as well. And if you want to read about the stories that we've been talking about, then you need a Times subscription. To get that, go to times.radio/subscribe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.